Hello and welcome to the 6++ Show, a podcast for your wargaming and 40k needs. Hobby talk, tactics, tournament reports, lore and much more. We have it all. Please welcome your host for the evening, Tom.
Oh my god.
Look at this!
Hello. Six plus show. We are coming together on the fly here. Don't worry about it. This is what happens when Chris leaves us alone for even a moment. We cannot be trusted with these kinds of responsibilities. But we've made it. We're in. Everything appears to be working the way you would expect. So I am your host, Tom. I'm back again. I'm going to be talking all things 40k with some of my good buddies from the 6++ team tonight. We are exactly as chaotic as we might appear to you here. If you're listening in from somewhere, do let us know what you're up to give us a shout out. It'd be nice to hear from you and to chat back across the episode. We are talking about one of the great divides in 40k, the faction specialist versus army hopping mentalities tonight, which I think actually there's tons of really interesting things to say about, especially from a sort of competitive or developmental perspective, which is obviously an angle that we're really interested in covering. I'm going to introduce our players and then we're going to do a little roundup of what's been going on with the channel and then we'll dive straight into it. So I'm going to start not where I always start because Chris is not here. Chris is off somewhere else. I'm playing him in a bat rep tomorrow, so he's probably just practicing rigorously playing against himself as he likes to do, getting ready for that. So I'll start instead with Ed. How are you doing, my man?
I'm not bad. I'm gonna apologize. I found out I was doing the button pushing 3 minutes ago, and
I actually think that's generous.
And since the last time I've done it, we've had a lot of upgrades behind the scenes, so yeah. No, other than that, all good. Played a game earlier of Blood Angels into Death Guard. Was fun.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, just my mate. I've been chipping away at convincing him to play something other than Chaos Knights because there's just the fundamental, you know, you're playing an army that doesn't play like anything else. There is a, realistically, a 3-2 or a 4-1 cap unless you're Josh Roberts because you're just going to play against Iron Storm and lose, and that sucks. So, yeah, that's pretty much what I've been doing.
Which did you pilot?
I was playing the Blood Angels.
Okay, I was going to say, I thought for a moment we were going to get to call you out as playing Death Guard.
I'm quite keen to play them, but
they are
emotionally, I don't know if my mate could handle that because he's played a lot of Chaos Knights, then I started playing them, and it's not a lot of fun to practice into the same army that you're playing yourself. So I'll give them a miss for now and just beat them on Hypercrypt or something like that.
Yeah, fantastic. And how did you find Blood Angels? Because they're also very exciting right now.
A lot of fun. I was playing the version with two Bolt Predators, and I just turned one part to them in the middle of the board and went, you don't want to walk out of your, you know, zone of control, do you? You didn't want me to flame you to death. Well, that was good.
Good times.
A lot of fun tools in there.
Yeah, Bolt Predators are really good. I'm also joined tonight by Jack. Jack, how are you doing, mate?
I'm doing fantastically, Tom.
Wonderful. And you have some very pretty artwork behind you.
Yeah, it's some original artwork. It's it's painted for me, created a canvas, a nice little backdrop.
Very, very cool. I was thinking just before we came on, I think, you need to start playing slightly more evil armies now, because that is quite a sort of sinister and dark look. And I don't think the towel really would have much to do with that. It doesn't really feel like their jam.
There's a more colourful one on the back. I'll swap it around.
A sort of greater good canvas. Wonderful. Have you played any 40k or done any hobbying lately, Jack?
You went to Peterborough Slam 6 the weekend.
Yeah.
Had a lot of fun there. Came, I believe it was 10th overall. So
very well done.
Not too
very
bad.
Well done. Yep.
And then beyond that, I've just been writing tau lists with the new tau codex. Trying to mess around with that, see if I can find something that I'm happy with. But yeah, that's pretty much all I've been up to. I've been playing Kroot. I've been putting the Kroot foaming box together. I've just put all the carnivores. Then I'm just Zenithal them. I'm going to contrast them all over in a bit.
What sort of colours are you going for on your Kroot?
They're like the Plague Bearer green contrast paint. Okay, so it's like a very, very bright green.
Yeah, it's a lovely one, that one. Yeah, fantastic. And how are the models to build and paint? It looks a very cool box.
Really good, actually. The Kroot go together really, really well. It is one of those ones where they're a bit monopose.
Yeah.
There's like two... The head options are obviously all interchangeable, but the arms, there's like two sets of arms for each body, kind of, or one or two for each body. So there is a bit of variance in there. But if you want to like switch up, you're gonna have to like grind some arms down and green stuff a few bits if you want to like heavily vary. It doesn't bother me. I If I need 40 of them, I'll just have, I don't know, like three or four of them the same. I don't care. But if you're a hobbyist out there, then that might be something that you care about.
For sure. Okay, excellent. And I'm also joined tonight. He's back again. It is the lovely Rob Kimpton. Rob, how are you doing?
Yeah, good. Thanks. Good, thanks.
Have you changed your camera angle? Do you not want people coming in through your door whilst you're presenting?
Yeah. there's a great little screenshot we got out of that, though. Just break it in.
What's new in your 40K life, Rob? You done anything interesting?
Yeah, still painting some Howling Banshees, getting my Elder project off the ground. Almost finished a squad of five. It's taking very, very long. I don't think I'm ever going to finish this army. I have 2,000 points painted.
Possibly not.
Yeah, and I've played a couple of games of TTS, played against Sisters, tried to go in all in turn one and failed a re-rolled 6-inch charge into some Arco Flagellants. That was good fun.
Oh, dear.
And then I had another game with Eldar, practicing for some scrims that we got coming up.
Yes, yeah, these are scrims with Luxembourg. We have made Rob take Eldari because Drakari don't pop up in many WTC8s right now, so we needed something that was a bit more of a done thing.
Yeah, it didn't go well. It was into lots of Thunderwolf cavalry that ran very fast at my face.
Yes, yeah, they will run. That does feel like a difficult one for Eldar. We'll get you some practice into something a little bit more reasonable soon. I've definitely been playing on the WTC boards.
Truly, I fear the Rob Kimpton that is freed from the shackles of Drukhari.
Yeah,
has finished his gravity training chamber. Timon.
It's very scary.
Do you know that every unit can actually do something in other armies?
Yes,
it's not just chaff and shit.
Yeah. Sometimes, other armies have stuff that's job is not just to die in the way. It's interesting. Yeah, well, I mean, that will be relevant fodder for our discussion tonight. Because obviously, Rob Kimpton, as you will know, listeners, is a Drakari all-in faction specialist. He's played them as long as I have known him. So he has seen the highs and lows of what it is to be a faction specialist for a very long time. So that's going to be really useful. Right, I'm going to shout out some people in the chat, and then we will do some self-promotion, because we're very good at self-promotion, possibly the best. We have Existence UK in. We have Across the Tabletop. Welcome. We have Shiruni in. Across the Tabletop was painting Death Corp. Amazing. That's really, really cool. I saw some very nicely converted Death Corp Bulgrin the other day. They looked amazing with like all the gas masks. It's a really nice look on the models when you just go all the way across the scheme. Mr. Fellblade is in painting a Goliath truck. Very nice. We like a Goliath truck in this house. Me and Jack, both fans of the Goliath truck. Chris Cadd is still listening whilst playing Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. You are still distracting. That's a good thing. Yeah, we're still here to distract you. I'm glad that game is keeping you occupied. I did say a few of the guys are playing it in the chat, and I feel like at some point there's been a branding failure with Final Fantasy because it just keeps happening. So there's not anything especially final about it at this stage, but by all accounts, really good games. I've never actually played
Final Fantasy 27. No, for real this time, guys. You can trust me, it's the last one. Wait, how much money did it make? Run it back.
We'll do it again.
This is the equivalent of gamer boomer humor.
Where's a lad?
Oh no, am I crossing over the divide here into old age jokes? That's terrible. Oh god. Existence UK is building a goblin boss on a giant cave squig. That's amazing. Is that for Old World or for Sigmar? Existence UK, let us know. I don't know which ones have that one in, but I do know it's a beautiful model. And Jack is in. Good evening. Okay, wonderful. Yeah, do keep piping up in the chat. Lovely to have you here. As far as the Plus Roundup goes, we are continuing to have a really busy time of late. We've been making loads of content. Thanks very much to everyone for responding to it. We had the wonderful Matchup Plus Plus, which is Jack's baby, go out this week talking about how to beat Custodes, something we're all very deeply invested in. And I think it was a really good episode. I feel like we covered some really interesting ground. So definitely check that out. If you've been bouncing your face off Custodes and you want to know how to do it a little bit better or a little bit differently, I think we get into a whole bunch of their weak spots and vulnerabilities in that episode. We also have the Tale of Six-ish Wargamers episode 2. So our Old World adventures continue. So if you want to see the gradual scaling up of our Old World armies and the painting, the models therein, then do check that out. Spoilers, I didn't make it into this one because I haven't painted enough goats yet, but I'm going to come in really strong for the third episode with 1,000 points because monsters are big and easy to paint. I think we also have my Return of the Archon part 3 coming out this week, I think probably tomorrow. And we've also had the Cracking the Codex with Scouting Ahead with the Kroot Hunting Pack has dropped since the last episode as well. So a whole bunch of different things. And I know that Davey has a Bugwatch interview in the pipeline, and I'm interviewing Liam VSL on Thursday night, and he's going to teach me how to finally win games with Thousand Suns. So I'm really looking forward to that. In short, it's a very, very busy time. So please do keep hitting like and subscribe. Please do keep supporting. Remember that you can become a member if you are so minded. We've got a bunch of people supporting us on YouTube now. That helps us massively with our planning and our forward thinking as far as tech and support goes. So thank you so much, everybody that's chipped in with that so far. And you can obviously leave super chats as well. No one's bought Chris a hat yet. I'm devastated. It's such an easy opportunity to make Chris wear a hat for an undefined amount of time. So someone needs to take us up on that eventually. Ed's leaving now. Oh no, he's coming back. He's done a switcheroo. Oh, he's got his. Oh, it's his hat. It's his Make Orcs Great Again hat. That's amazing.
Your faction specialism.
I did see a little bit of Ed the Orc player popping up in the chat this week in a burst of a flurry of excitement and energy as leaks from the new Orc book came out.
Do you want to have like a quick 5-minute rundown on the reviews that we've seen? Disparate, how exciting one is and how absolutely fucking soul-destroying the ones that we've seen today are? Should we have like a quick 2 minutes?
Let's briefly hot take it, shall we? Let's go. So Orcs and Custodes are obviously coming out. We've seen some stuff from both. Ed, you play both these armies. How do you feel?
One of them I'm quite excited about, and it's not the one I want to feel excited about. I'm really enjoying playing Custodes at the moment. There's a great matchup plus, as you said, just come out. Yep. I think the real thing to do might be wait 6 weeks and then just not care. We've seen that there's going to be a grand total of 4 detachments for Custodes, and 2 of them are shackled to Sisters. Now, I don't know if you've seen the rules for Sisters. The one wound T3 3-up save models.
Yeah, I've only ever seen them as an action monkey or a throwaway objective holder, so it's hard to imagine a detachment based fully around them is going to have a great time. That's interesting. What do you think, Jay?
Games Workshop really saw the reaction to the Tau Codex with their 4 detachments, where one was tied to a bunch of models that people don't necessarily want to use unless it's a meme. And then they were like, I see people don't like that. Well, perhaps we'll try 2 of those detachments.
Double down.
And perhaps
double down.
People will enjoy it then.
Yeah.
No, don't be daft, Jack. There's such a lead time that we know that's not possible. What it is, it's the ramping decision that they've gone with, that all the cheap units are going to have their own detachment and it's going to spread through the Codex. So there's going to be 4 detachments in the Chaos Codex and 3 of them are going to be cultist focused.
Yes, exactly that. And then when they get to GSC, I think they'll probably just do a whole bunch of Goliath Rock Grinder themed detachments and go in the other direction. They've fallen off the end of the scale, they've come all the way back around. It's Rock Grind. You can have battle line, take 6 Rock Grinders, go nuts. It's all going to be very reasonable. But I mean, I guess so. Commenting on the rules that you've seen, then Ed, what are we thinking as a very early sighter of these two books? How are you feeling
for Custodes? I hope that the other 2 detachments are good.
Okay,
that's all I can say. Like, nothing I've seen so far for the 2 that they've sort of vaguely talked about have been interesting at all. Orcs look fucking incredible, though.
Like, yes.
So we've got Dreadmob, where you go, I can have either lethal hits, sustained hits, or AP, an additional AP2 mm-hmm. on crit wounds, I think it was. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I lost interest after the first 2, because the first 2 were just really good.
Yeah.
You can either roll a die, or you can just say, I'm having that one. If I pick that one, I become hazardous. Cool.
Yeah.
Don't value my life at all. Yep. Not a problem.
That's the best thing about it, is just how much hazardous is going on.
Yeah. Are we looking for just, you know, 18 killer cans in Dreadmob? Yes, we are. And then also Gorkonauts, Morkonauts, whatever else you want to fit in there. I'm hoping that they give Stompers a points cost that's approaching a reasonable level. Since I've played the game, you know, back, you know, rejoining in 8th, they've been unreasonably expensive. They can, like, I don't know, what a Catan cost? 255. I reckon that's a fair comparison. Because if you put lethal hits on all of those guns, suddenly I don't care that you're hitting on 5s. It'll be good. And then obviously there's the detachment that there's going to be 3 or 4 people, you know, the usual suspects running in the UKTC, where there's just going to be 250 green models on the board all with a 5-up invun. That's going to be something that I'm going to have to play against. And
yeah, that exists.
I want to play myself.
Reminder that Mech Boy Mega Knobs have a 2-up save and a 4-up invun. So that's a thing. Let's see how that combos. I think there is some keyword stipulations for all this, so we'll have to see. But it certainly looks very exciting. And I mean, when Rob and I are looking through the index, when I played Orcs the other day, sort of trying them out, there is an awful lot of strength 9, AP2, damage 3 shooting in that book. So stuff that suddenly turns that into even more dangerous.
+1 to wound and damage.
Really, really interesting. And Dreadmob looks like it'll be a lot of fun. a very exciting news, by the way, for our chat, because Scary is in the chat. Scary says hello. Says poster boy for faction specialist checking in here. I think probably the faction specialist, probably the most iconic one I can think of in 40K. So an absolute pleasure to have you in here, Scary.
Big fan of orcs, isn't he?
Oh, he loves orcs. Yeah, an orc main. Yeah. But no, in all seriousness, obviously, a big part of the reason I even played Drakari is Scary. So it's a good example of how infectious faction specialism can be, how exciting you can be about an army through thick or thin. So I'm looking forward to seeing what Scary has to say about our conversation tonight. And Mr. Fellblade says, just to clarify, Chris has to wear a hat that is exactly the cost of the super chat. It was never specified, Mr. Fellblade, but I'm going to say yes. I'm going to say that's exactly how it works. and we'll go from there. Existence UK says, my heart says Dread Mob, but I suspect the Bully Boys will be the best. You might be right. That whole what
hot take.
You know, we'll see. Yeah, go on.
I don't think they're going to be that good.
You don't think they're going to be that good?
I don't think a 5+ invul on all those guys is that good.
me and Rob are certainly well up for it.
The reason I say that is because it's not too different from a 5+ Field of Pain. It is better, obviously, mm-hmm. but like a lot of orcs used to have a 5+ or 6+ Field of Pain anyway. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of similar. Like,
you can have both, though.
It's have both. Rack Spam 2.0.
Plug a Pain Boy in. It's a lot.
It's only on models of the boys keyword, which I think is one data sheet, right?
Yeah.
So
It's only 1,200 boys for 1,200 points for 120 snagger boys. It'll be fine.
Do the beast snaggers get the boy keyword?
Well, it's less if it's on the other boys.
I'm not sure, actually.
No, I don't think they do it current, but I wonder if they do in the new rules, because if they do, Zug.
Yeah. Says Bully Boys is double wah for Nobs and Meganobs. What about second wah? Very, very interesting. Very, very intriguing.
I love how that's the joke that everyone goes with. I thought I was really clever when I made that joke. Nobody thought it was funny when I said it.
But it is good, isn't it? It's just, yeah. I mean, you're going to have to say it every time. If you're playing orcs and you don't say what about second wah when you're declaring your second wah, you're not my friend. So.
And then you can look to your buddy that you've turned up to.
I think you just clicked at the same time for me and Jack.
Yeah. Go on, Jack.
People are going to be yelling wah through the tournament.
They are.
Twice a game.
That guy that screams wah now gets to do it twice per game, which means at a GT you are hearing that 10 times. That is very fun, isn't it?
Games Workshop, why do you give your strongest soldier the hardest battle?
Fuck off, Tau player.
Truly, I struggle.
But yeah, I think I always had a good feeling for orcs in this edition because it just feels like the way they've done detachments was tailor-made for a model and army range that wide. And I think it'll be really interesting to see. And conversely, something like Custodes doesn't have as many things to do, and there's not as many different directions you can take it. Although I'd love to see like a bikes detachment. Make bikes do cool things. That's all I want.
They had six detachments in 9th edition.
They did.
And they seem to have gone, we didn't like any of those ideas. I haven't seen the last two, so I'm pinning my hopes on that. But like, fucking hell.
Yeah, Jack in the chat, by the way, says, I played against a Waha once, not good for my hangover. Yeah, so what I find is I don't mind them on Saturday, I dislike them on Sunday. If they're still Wahing on Sunday, when I'm a bit tired and fragile and it's getting difficult to play, I don't like that. That's when I'm at my most vulnerable.
It may shock the viewers that I'm against Wahing.
Oh man, does that? Can you even be an orc main if you're definitively against? I mean, I know John Scrivens also doesn't like it. To be fair,
let me come to you with 60 10 nil dice, and then we'll talk again. So you're like my orc main.
Wonderful. Okay, right. I think Scrivens in the chat. And he says he hates it. Fair enough. Right, we are going to get into the conversation today. So obviously, I mean, I titled this as Faction Specialist versus Army Hoppers, and I think. What we'll be trying to do is, A, get a sense of what these terms even mean, how we even define this. And I think that in itself is quite telling, and we can kind of stretch the limits of what these terms mean a little bit. But then I guess it's useful to think in terms of, say, we're interested in development, we're interested in competing at 6++. So what are the implications of these different approaches? What are the kind of consequences? What are the pros and cons? What sorts of things do you as a player pursuing either of these bear in mind? Now, Jack is Jack was always going to be very keen to talk in this episode. You're putting your hand up, which I respect. So let's have it. Go on.
I just want to table something, right? Because I know we're doing faction specialist versus army hopper. I want to table the idea that we, instead of calling people army hopper, because I think that has like a derogative like connotation to it, we say faction opportunist.
Okay.
Does that sound better?
I think I see what you mean, and I think there's implications in there that are useful. And I think so. Yeah, I mean, let's start with army hopper, because again, I didn't want to use meta chaser because that's so often used pejoratively, right? There's often a very pejorative application. But fundamentally, we're talking, aren't we, about people who switch armies very regularly, especially in a competitive setting, and are switching armies in pursuit, typically, of competitive advantage. And I don't know what you guys think. Is that a fair way of defining faction opportunist?
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense to me. Ultimately, it's people who I would probably say swap probably every data slate, roughly. It's probably like a good kind of bar for that. I think that's pretty common.
Yeah.
For people who have a lot of factions who'd like to swap a lot.
Mm-hmm. So. Sounds about right.
Ed, how often do you switch?
Three weeks. It
depends, because if I find a faction that I really like playing, I'll stick with it for ages, and then they'll do something stupid like bring a new edition out and kill any interest I have in playing Tau ever again. Shame. Because I was on Tau for about 8 months, but I was only on Necrons for a couple of events, and then they changed things that made them not enjoyable in the way that I wanted to play them. Now I'm playing Custodes, and then they're going to kill Custodes. So what I'm saying is, it's not my fault. Games Workshop has it out for me, personally, which is entirely possible, actually. I should probably stop talking.
We've got a couple of qualifications. I mean, I think the data slate timing is actually really interesting because, obviously now we have these really regular chunks and windows. You can very much see that process, right? There is often a sort of creative energy of, oh, that's got a buff, I'm going to go play that. Or, oh, that's got nerfed, I'm going to drop that, play something else. Which I think, lots of players with multiple armies are very much in tune with. Scrivo also says data slate or new codex. Yes, Scrivo. That is absolutely true up to a point. But it depends on what codexes are doing, doesn't it? Because, as I say, we've seen an interesting phenomenon this edition where some codexes don't give players what it is they're looking for when they arrive. So actually it's a moving away from codexes rather than jumping onto them. But certainly ninth was very much defined by the top of the game being, oh, the new book's out, smash everyone with that. Then the next book's out, it's got the counter to that, smash everyone with that, and round you go, right?
I think as a general rule, I think Games Workshop has gone out of their way to avoid as much codex creep as possible.
I think that's right.
I think it's just Necrons that are the outliers being really good.
Yes.
And then AdMech being not good in the other direction. Everything else is like quite squished together.
Yes.
I think. Obviously, new books notwithstanding, the Custodes and all, I'm not talking about those. But the ones that are released all seem to be like fairly close in power level. So I think that kind of curtails that a little bit, but that gets sort of mitigated by the fact we have the data slates come out, and the data slates are now the more the meta shifter rather than the codexes where they were.
I completely agree.
So you end up with like weird jumps, like people, like everyone went to obviously Eldar, everyone's on Eldar at the start.
Yep.
And then we had, you know, our first data slate, Eldar got nerfed a bit. People discovered that Chaos were good because they didn't get any changes, but people just discovered that. That was just a normal meta revolution. And then people have abandoned them, essentially. Yeah. Now they've got changes. But I think this is just one of those things where I think Chaos is a good example because they're not bad. They're just not interesting anymore because they've been nerfed. So people are going to jump up. Because I think that's kind of part of the reason why people jump a lot is that those factions that generally have a lot of power are more interesting to play.
Yes.
And
there is an extent with faction swapping in general, where, as you say, it's not purely about competitive strength some of the time. It's about a new challenge. It's about trying something different, sort of stretching your capacity or your abilities. I definitely found when I was first getting into the game, it's just very exciting falling in love with like a different rule set or a different set of abilities. It's quite fun sort of trying to solve something, isn't it, and dig into it. And so there are motivations for switching between armies that aren't purely about strength. But I think strength and perceived strength, especially, and actually perception's a big part of this, right? It's not always purely about how good something is. As you say, I played against Chaos Space Marines in peak Eldar meta, and I came away from that going, I went and told Lee, I was like, you know, this is going to be
incredible, right? This army's got everything. It's going to be one of the best armies in the game. And it straight up was for many, many months before eating a bullet, unfortunately. Let's take it to this faction specialist side of things. How do we define what makes a faction specialist? Because this is kind of interesting as well, right? Obviously, we've got Skari in the chat, so Skari's one. But that's a very strong example where it's like, you know, the actual personality of a content creator and personality in the game is almost, you know, singularly attached to a given army.
I think you've got to play them a lot. Uh-huh. You've got to win a reasonable amount of games. Like, you're not a faction specialist if you're just a dedicated orc player. You're just
so success is actually attached to this, then, we think.
Well, like, if you think about factions where people, you know, you have orc players who've been playing orcs for 5 years and they've probably won 5 games across those 5 years.
And they wear cowboy
hats.
I've seen them.
Yeah, and they have a great... I wish I had that much fun playing Warhammer.
Yeah. Yeah.
With or without, you know, shouting war at the top of my lungs. So I think you have to have some success. And I think you've got to be willing to iterate and not necessarily be alone in developing lists, but when, you know, changes in the meta come, work out what you can do for it and run different lists and find new ways to play the faction. I think that, for me,
yes,
makes a faction specialist.
And this is one area I really want to pick up on when we get to the kind of the strengths and weaknesses, but I think that's right, because I think a lot of the time, if you are a faction specialist and you play a faction sort of weather dependent, as it were, whether it's good or not, you often do have to do that creative work on your own, because you don't necessarily have a Discord buzzing with people that think the army is really good and are excited to try X, Y, Z. You don't necessarily have all the hype and noise around it, which means you have to solve problems on your own. But actually, I do think in the end, the skill set that connects the two meets there to some extent. But that is something we definitely associate with faction specialists, is they can iterate, they can innovate, they run things their own way, they have a clear sense of how they want to play. Rob, you were going to come in on this as well.
I was going to say effectively, Ned said it's getting results, and also it's sticking with the faction in the low points as well. That I think that's a huge defining factor of, you know, when you are down in the dumps with your faction, you see it as a challenge. You don't go, oh, no, I'm not going to win games with this. Like, actually, how can I rock up to a table? People are going to think this is an easy win. Mm-hmm. They're easily going to get a 15-5. Actually, no, it's going to be a very close game, or I'm going to pull something out that they don't know. And that, for me, faction specialism is just that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, completely. And I think that's it. It's playing an army often well above and beyond its perceived ceiling, and being willing to do the work with it even when it's in a difficult place or a less optimal place. And as you say, at some stage, I think with specialism, you are prioritizing your, you know, connection to that army over its perceived success or results, right? You're making that decision. Yeah. And it means you're not just there for the good times. And obviously with our beloved Drakari, as Skari in the chat will also know, you know, there was a very hot start to a year not so long ago when that ninth codex, I found it in the garage actually today. I was going through finding bits for our bat rope tomorrow, and I just saw the ninth edition Drakari book. I was like, oh, you monster, looking back up at me with all its powerful, powerful rules. But obviously, suddenly, Drakari became a really, really played and covered faction for the best part of a year, right? But have now dropped right back down to being a very, you know, very small percentage of the game and low number of players. And I think something like Harlequin's probably quite similar, right? Again, that had a big boom, but was not typically a very commonly played army.
I think to put out a controversial opinion again, I'm just
that's
I'm
what,
just
that's full what of you're here for, Jet. I pretty much wrote this for you, so you just go nuts.
I think you can be a faction specialist in more than one faction, because I think in order to be a faction specialist, you basically have to master the faction, which ultimately comes down to how much you can play the game. Mm-hmm. For example, I think a good example of this is actually Innes Wilson, right? Because he's probably he's a Space Marine specialist, I would say, right? Yeah. He's played Space Marines a lot. But he probably is also a Tyranid specialist, because he's also played Tyranids a lot. Yeah. So, but he also plays the game like every single day, probably more than once a day. Yeah. So, and like, so most people can't keep up with that, and so they wouldn't be able to become a specialist or master in any one faction. But I think it also kind of ties in with what Rob said as well, where you can't really master a faction truly, I don't think, unless you've played it when it's not the best army in the game.
I completely agree.
Because it's that old adage that adversity breeds innovation, right?
Yes.
You're not going to learn the best ways to, not just like list innovation, but just like the best way to play, like the movement tricks, the different like edge case uses for stratagems or enhancements or different units and stuff like that. You're not going to learn that unless you have to really struggle to get those wins.
Yes.
So I think playing the faction when it's not so good is kind of a key aspect of becoming a specialist.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think we had the metaphor of weight training earlier, but actually I think that's spot on with faction specialism a lot of the time. I think when you commit to just playing an army meta be damned, that often means playing uphill into things which are present a very real challenge that is often extremely difficult to deal with, right? And there you learn a lot and gain a lot from doing that. And when we start thinking, you know, what the pros and cons are, I think that's a big part of it. And that's certainly, and I don't think, again, you don't have to purely be playing one faction. You could also just be selecting to play not as good factions and you're still going to come up against those kinds of concerns. But as you say, it's in fact, you don't have to be a single army player to be a faction specialist. And ultimately, yeah, it probably does come down in the main to how often do you play it? How deeply do you understand it, right? How bedded in are those sort of fundamentals? And those can carry across time.
I think, isn't the real secret to it that there's not actually that many playstyles in Warhammer? So, like, are you just a playstyle specialist? Are you a tricksy faction with your glass cannon boots? Oh, hey, that covers like four different armies. Ooh. Or are you go uppy, downy, shooty? Hey, we've got Hypercrypt and we've got Grey Knights doing the exact same thing.
Increasingly large number of armies that covers.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like the gap between certain armies, especially with detachments, is often less now in certain ways as well, right? And there's definitely detachments that look and feel. But yeah, I think playstyle specialists is, I mean, an example that springs to mind would be someone like Sean Naden, right? Where it's like, he plays Orcs and he also plays Drakari, but it's like he will flood tons of stuff at you and absolutely outdo you with transports and activation and all that stuff. And that's a style he evidently really likes.
Yeah, I'd say that's where I fall at the moment, although I'm looking to change that. Because I go, what's the most mathematically correct warm of meat that I can put in the center of the board and just say, no, you don't get to have any primary, and we'll worry about the rest later.
And that statistical viewpoint, I think, is probably more of an a faction opportunist thing, I think, which is, but again, it gets into the heart of this, which is that ultimately for all the dressing we put on armies, we put fancy names on them, we give them cool models, they have a whole lore behind them, but they also boil down to rules and numbers, right? And that's ultimately what they have, and the skills and the understanding of those carries over across armies, and you can find things that you like across multiple different armies. And as you say, styles lend themselves to particular ways of doing things. Are you all about durability? Are you all about speed? Are you all about kind of sequencing and tricks and all of that kind of stuff? And so in that sense, again, sometimes I think, again, there's a few players I know who've started playing CSM early this edition, like, well, this feels actually more like 9th Drakari than 10th Drakari do at this moment in time, because Chosen yeeting out from somewhere and running across and punting something was something that Incubi at that time could not do. So, you know, if actually what you were is an advance and charge and slap you in the space, but in the face specialist, then that book made a lot of sense, right? And it was a kind of logical change and move in that sense. All right, okay. I mean, anything to add on the definitions front before we get into thinking what the kind of ups and downs of this are? Okay, let's start with changing armies frequently or our faction opportunism. What are the benefits of doing this? If we start with the positives, why is it good or useful to do this?
You get a real broad understanding of the mechanics of the game as a whole, I think.
I think so, yeah. It's quite useful. I mean, this is something I've changed armies plenty of times over the last few years as well. And one thing that you get from doing that is a real sense of what an opponent playing that army does not want and does not like. And that's really, really useful. Like when I play against Drakari or Eldar, I know exactly what they don't want to be happening to them because I play those armies in depth. And that's very useful. And that's quite useful to learn knowledge. And that is where ultimately I think, you know, whether you're a specialist or someone who changes armies all the time, until you understand other armies really deeply, you're going to struggle playing into them. And one good way of doing that is to play those armies as well and get a sense of how they work, right? Cool. What are the kind of advantages or benefits are there?
I think the super obvious one is you get better results, right? Let's be super clear. Like,
you're going to play the 60% win rate faction.
Exactly.
There's a reason why when you look at the best players in the game, if you go to the UK ATC rankings, look at the top 10, you know, your Innisfils, as I said, your Jack Tights, so on and so forth. they play a whole bunch of different armies, yeah. right? And there's a reason why there's it's going to push your performance up because the reason I think one of the biggest reasons that factions are good is because they cover mistakes. They are very forgiving of mistakes. Completely. So when you play a lot of factions, you end up with like a very wide skill pool, but it's very shallow.
I agree with that. Yeah,
particularly because if you're playing something when it's good, you're only going to play that faction in one playstyle, right? So like when Chaos were good, they had the Forge Fiends, the shooty obliterators, all that sort of stuff. So it's very shooty CSM, right? But you didn't really play the sort of melee lists, kind of like the pure melee lists, the traditional Chaos Space Marine lists. So that's not like a skill that you pick up.
I'm going to raise sense. You as well. When a cursed cultist was a thing, you just won the primary by turning up as well, and that was that was really nice. And you watch a ton of games with lots of accursed cultists, and you're like, you know, this primary game just plays itself. Really, you just have more OC than anyone on a point, and it can then go and get and batter their point, and you do that several times.
Necron players very fully shook just every time. I was stood playing Lee. This will be fine, and then they just got into me and went, oh no, this isn't fine at all, this is actually horrendous.
But yeah, so I think that's right, Jack. I think it's often a very forgiving, if you're jumping specifically because things are overtuned or undercosted or too good, you are simply playing an easier game more often, a lot more of the time, and so the results are better. You breeze through those early rounds. The first three rounds of the GT where I took Light Harlequins, released Light Harlequins, were the most one-sided massacres I'd ever played in my entire life. And it was just like, this is horrific. Like, this, everything about this is absolutely awful. Then I hit Lee Churchwood, faction specialist, and he demolished me, and it was beautiful.
You can end up with a lot of the time that it can push you up like a whole other win bracket, right? Like a 3-2 to a 4-1 or a 4-1 to a 5-0. Like, they can it can literally be that much of a difference by being an opportunist and going to that faction that is having more success or has like a sort of build renaissance in the way that Chaos Space Marines did in the second day of Slate.
Yeah, I think completely so. And I think there's at the top of the game when certain armies are really strong, you get that phenomenon where players whose win rates are not normally high are suddenly high. Whereas I think with faction specialism, we tend to have associated the other way around, right? Where players that really know the army actually add something, and you'll see, you know, they're adding 20% to what an army is actually pulling at normally for data, right? But you don't get that much. It's much less common for that sort of just sudden the army is carrying you upwards when it's your own army, unless it suddenly gets really, really juiced up out of control. I think that's very relevant. I do think stuff's falling down somewhere. Eddie, have you got stuff that's falling down?
I heard it, and I just looked. I could see in the corner just like an empty cup going.
Chaotic energy.
It's got ghosts in your house this week.
Yeah, you'd love to see it.
I've got the window open. It's pissing freezing. And I'm like, I could close this, but it's all the way over here and I can't reach it.
It's the ghosts of armies past that it is abandoned and is
squeaks of buggies.
This is quite a small room. There's not going to be enough room for me in here with all these
ghosts. The entire thing is just going to fall down behind you. I was going to say, there is one very positive side effect of the results boost effect, which is something I definitely felt when I was relatively new at the game still when Drakari got jacked up in 9th edition. And what I suddenly found was I would just be hitting these players at a different level to what I was used to, right? I'd have a few easy games and then I would suddenly hit this steely-faced person who's thought about nothing else but how to destroy raiders and kill everything in it, and then they would demolish me. And so there's a level of play that you then start encountering, which you may not, if you're scrapping around, you know, trying to get to those later rounds with an army and you're not sort of hitting very, very top players, that can itself be an issue. So I think it can be a shortcut to playing into much stronger players, which in turn can level you up, because I think playing strong players is the way you level up above all else. So that definitely is one upside to doing it. What else do we think? Are there any other kind of positives or advantages to it?
Sorry, is that to opportunists in general?
Yeah, still on opportunism in general. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I think you end up with I think as Rob said before, you end up knowing what a lot of factions just do, right? You end up learning a lot of matchups, kind of in as a, so you add more like knowledge to the repertoire basically, because you end up I'm trying to think of a best way to word this. When you have more like different matchups of loads of different factions, it makes it easier to predict how matchups are going to go.
Oh yeah,
because you know how these armies interact with each other a lot more, rather than having the just because you have a lot of knowledge about different.
I think another advantage in that sense is also that it's just if a meta suddenly changes in a way that you're like, I need X tool, and your army maybe can do a bit of that. Your favorite army, but actually maybe it doesn't do it very well, and actually a different army you play is suddenly in a really ideal place for that. It's rather than I'll change 200 points on my list and hope that's enough, it's I just have the thing that deals with this, right? And as you know, you see very successful kind of high ranking players do this all the time, where they just pivot to something that just very adroitly counters what's already out in the meta, right? And it's definitely so something that happened to me accidentally with GSC at one stage, where I'd been slaving away with GSC for ages, and then suddenly after they got a bunch of buffs, it was like, oh, these just demolish Harlequins and Tyranids and a whole bunch of things that have been really horrible for ages, and suddenly they're in this amazing spot in the meta where they were a really good tool for dealing with those. And so it's you can get those moments in a meta if you have more tools to reach for, I guess.
I think an example of what I'm saying is I thought this while you were talking. So for me as a Tau player, right? Let's say mm-hmm. I'm playing against Dark Angels or the new Dark Angels Codex. I've not played against the new Dark Angels Codex because I don't think anyone has.
I haven't ever played it. No, I might just never play against it and just call it a day.
If you asked me to name all the Dark Angels units, I couldn't do it. I don't know what they are. I just don't know.
That's the easy bit. Try naming the fucking detachments. Like, at least the models are interesting. The models look gorgeous. The aesthetic's fantastic. You know, they've got this real like knightly vow going, and then but the rules are terrible. Couldn't tell you those.
It's not a little guy in a big robot, so I don't care. So
in a robe.
What I mean is that if I haven't played against the Dark Angels Codex before and I come up against it, there's going to be a bunch of units there that I have no real context for what they do.
Yes.
But if you're an army opportunist and you say you play Dark Angels at the end of last edition, you know what all the Dark Angel units are, and you know kind of roughly what they do. And if you own a Dark Angels army, you probably at least leaf through the codex to see what the models you own do.
Absolutely.
So you kind of like have a general idea. So if you're going in with zero knowledge, I think you have like a slight leg up on someone who is a faction specialist in that case.
Yeah, I think so. There's a sort of baseline kind of muscle memory, isn't there, for a faction? Like what are the units? What are their assigned roles? What are the basics I'm expecting from this?
Yeah, even like the basics of, I think a good example for this is like Chaos Knights. Yep. Like, God, for so long, I just couldn't tell them apart. I don't even know which knight was which. I'm like, okay, they're all Ordogs, and that's what they are.
It's pretty simple. One's got guns, one doesn't.
Yeah, for a Chaos Knight player, it's very simple. But for someone who has never played Chaos Knights, learning them quickly was just like, wait, which one is... That's the gun one, and that one has... What rule?
I'm completely with you. There's a moment in the game where like the Stalker finally shoots, and you're like, "Oh, that's where he was." I have no idea. I don't know where that guy is. Like, he could be a brigand. They all look the same to me. I've got absolutely no idea.
When that hops behind a ruin and you can't see the whole model, and you're like, "Is that a Stalker or is that a brigand?" Like, you know, you don't know. So
I just want to put it out there to the viewers: these two are purported to be fairly competent players, and yet they couldn't learn 2.5 data sheets.
I just lose interest when it's that samey looking, you know.
Sure, fine. We'll say Thousand Sons.
It was a funny example. Now you've got me on Thousand Sons is a better example. Yeah. Okay. So we've got like four different flavors of sorcerer that all do different things, and they all look basically the same, right?
Well, GSC. Who the hell knows what the difference between an acolyte and a neophyte is if you don't play GSC? No one does.
Still can't remember.
Completely. And so I think it's why you see people in kind of the content creation world or the international teams world do well, because again, they have to think across a bunch of different things, and that baseline familiarity of thinking and playing and reading into all the different armies does sink in and is a useful thing, right? I feel like some of the things we talked about are sort of slightly fast food advantages, like just tapping into something when it's a bit too good and sort of coasting a little bit. But actually, there's from a knowledge standpoint, trying to deeply understand a wider range of armies is a really positive thing, right? And that's something that you do get from moving from army to army.
I think that's why it has a reputation for being the dark side of 40k, right? Because it's the quick path to power,
absolutely.
A high win rate. It's not a secret the Jedi would teach you.
exactly.
And I think it's definitely part of that. And I think there's the negative connotations it attracts are a range of different things. I think it's, as you say, it's partly because it's cutting corners. I think it's partly because there is a social contract dimension to saying I'm only ever going to play this game on unfair terms for my entire life. I personally think that's literally what I think. If any mate who like always wanted to play a game with with a 60% advantage every time, you'd be like, you're not fun to play games with. Is how I would feel about it. But I think obviously the assumption at the top of a game is, well, if we're all doing that, it levels out, right? So it's not really, but I think from the perspective of your average player, I think it does feel like that because you only ever encounter it when it batters you on a Sunday.
Oh, God. It's like the Tour de France. When they went back and did all the blood doping, the person who actually won was like 16th or something like that. Yeah. Check that out, by the way. Go and have a look at how wild hilarious. Cycling is.
That's crazy.
If you want to get in the top 16, you better be at faction hopping. Otherwise, you're clean.
I mean, certainly it is one of those things where in the actual at the top of the competitive game, you very rarely see pure specialists achieve those top results, right? Because the annoying thing with faction hopping, of course, is that once things line up for an army, that specialist is then sharing with a bunch of people who've just jumped onto the army as well. So actually, you know, I think a lot of players have this idea of a sort of time in the sun, right? It's like, oh, it'll be our turn at some point, you know, we'll get our go. But that's never how it actually works in practice, because the circus comes to town on your army, basically.
Time in the sun.
Yeah.
It's a horrible time to be playing the faction if you're a faction specialist.
Yeah, it's not fun, is it?
Everyone's decking for you. You expect yourself to be doing so well.
Yeah,
and all these people
so much
come
pressure.
In.
Yeah.
I think the skills you learn as well, being like constantly punching up, don't prepare you for when you're winning like all of your games without having to think.
Completely.
Because it's a completely different set of skills. And then suddenly when you're like, oh, I've got to maximize every point, you're like, oh, but I thought I was trying to scrape for every point. So instead of playing cagey, I should be playing very aggressive. And you can find yourself playing very differently, Drakkari being an example there.
No, completely that. And I think that's something I have in playstyle. Like it has taken me 2 years to learn very aggressive shutdown scoring play, right? Because that's not something I was, again, very used to playing sort of uphill when you're learning and you're playing uphill when you're struggling and just trying to do enough. And yeah, that book was crazy. And so suddenly it's like, when an army's that good, it's like, it doesn't matter where you position, you shove the whole thing forward, you take one hit, then you kill them with everything. And it's like, that's how it goes, right? Let's think of some positives and some pros for faction specialists, and then let's make the case for that. I feel like that's an easy one to sing some positives about, even though Ed's put a really provocative title down. You're trying to bait Scurry out here. You're trying to get an argument going.
Fine, I'll change it. Oops. That's not where it's going to be, but nice to highlight that one. You just keep talking.
Yeah, you carry on. All right, Rob, do you want to take it away on this?
Yeah, I think you develop as a player a lot more being a faction specialist. Mm-hmm. Bit of a caveat, though, if you're just starting out and your faction
is
horrible,
this is a really
important
caveat.
You will not be
caveat.
Learning because you will just be getting your ass handed to you constantly and you will not be enjoying the game. There is a tipping point.
Yeah, so I think that there's, for new players, as you say, if you're just playing an army where it's like, unless you were playing this perfectly, you wouldn't be in with a prayer of having results anyway. That's a really horrible place to start learning this game, right? That's not productive. Carry on, man.
Yeah, I think when you start hitting the kind of the 3-2 kind of bracket, if you're in there and you're a faction specialist, you will be hitting some hard games. You'll be learning what you need to do, what happens if you do something wrong.
Yeah.
And the limitations of the factions and what others do better.
Yeah. No, exactly that. And so you get that, you just have that bedded in. Again, there's a real muscle memory to it and an instinct to scenarios and situations and types of army play into each other and how to dig out of situations, how to steal a win. You know, being able to steal a win with an army you know really well, really important, smash and grab. And you don't necessarily train those skills if you don't play your army even when it's not the best thing in the game, right?
To reduce it down to another snappy tagline,
yes.
I think I think if you're a a faction specialist, it makes you better at the game, but it doesn't give you better results necessarily.
I think
because,
that's completely true.
Because as much as the holistic purist aspect of like, yeah, being really good at the game, it doesn't necessarily, like being good at the game is not necessarily what everything that you need to win tournaments in 40K.
No, not at all.
So, I mean, it's important, obviously, but it's not everything that you need. So, yeah, you probably get, if you're going for like results, you probably get better results from being an opportunist. But you definitely, I think you become a better player in general by being a specialist.
Yeah. Just some anecdotal evidence for that. I had so many easy round fives at GT when the NIDS book was fairly new. Because there were people who just like weren't really even capable of talking and also breathing at the same time. were like three in one. And you're just like, cool. So I win.
Yeah.
It's nice.
For that one, you didn't even have to roll dice. Just your opponent couldn't roll dice to kill you. That's so.
Yeah. That was pretty much it. Yeah.
Yeah. No, absolutely that. And I think that's it. And I think it's, you don't have the skills in adversity if you've not done all that uphill work and the weight training and other things. And again, genuine information of a faction and how to play it is really, really useful. And as you say, I don't think this ever reflects results at the very top of the game. I don't think it tends to. Although again, you do see some amazing, you know, list creations and interesting ideas coming up through the game.
I think when you're looking at like results and you're a faction specialist, you look at win rates and your win rate and what you're doing as well. It's a different, for me, it's a different, different bar you're looking at. You're not going
completely.
Oh, am I going 5-0? Am I going 4-1 at all my events?
It's not useful.
No, going okay, cool. The faction's got a 40% win rate, and I've got a 60% win rate.
Yeah, exactly. That.
That's an achievement.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's slightly changing and altering how you look at it. And again, as I said, really, and again, so Scurry again, he's in the chat, but he's a good example. So, you know, sort of the joke was that we weren't going to get any good Jakari buffs because he was continuing to go to events and do well with Real Space Raid. It's like, it's not going to help. We needed to stop.
Especially when only about four people were playing them.
Well, that was it.
Dollars all for.
Then they were there. They were not in a good way, right? They were not in a good way at all.
I've got a double-edged sword here.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly a positive, but also teams, like faction specialists and teams. But when you're not one of the top like 10 or 11 factions in the game and you just don't make your international squad, well, that sucks. Better luck next year. I hope they get a codex.
Yeah, I've felt this a little bit with England type stuff where it's sort of like the stuff I'm interested in playing hasn't really been in that top set of things, right? And you're kind of like, you kind of have to, you get a bit stretched because you're like, actually, I do want to play the things I want to play, and that's more interesting and more exciting to me than just going, I don't want to go and just play Sisters or just go and play, you know, Guard or something. Like, none of that appeals to me in the slightest.
Yeah, I mean, it can be, it is absolutely a blessing and a curse for teams being a faction specialist, right? Because, sure, you're gonna know your matchups for your faction backwards and forwards. That's great, right? But if you're, particularly if you're in the situation where you're applying for a national team, I'll do a fantasy callback. Way back in the day, I was a vampire count specialist. Uh-huh. Well, the captain of the ETC team I was applying for was also a vampire count specialist.
That's difficult.
So I never stood a chance, really. So you know, it was just unrealistic. But the similar kind of thing can happen for, like, if you were I'd say a Tau specialist, right? If you were a Tau specialist and you were trying to get on Team England in 40K, well, if Tau are on the nerfed data slate for WTC, it's gonna be really difficult for you to get on that team because they don't want a Tau player. And if you don't play Tau, then, you know, you're going to struggle.
No, exactly, right? And I mean, for a good example of the last couple of years, as far as WTC goes, Tau have just been struggling because Homers bring it down, right? It's like, you know, you can be as good as you like at Tau, but your opponent can take these two and get a reasonable score hiding, and you're like, that's really annoying. That causes them a problem in a team situation. So I think that's a really interesting example. And again, sometimes deep faction knowledge can also just be knowing that you're not that useful in a situation. Yeah. So I took Votan to a couple of the England events early on. We're doing matrices, and like, I can tell you with certainty that that is terrible, that is terrible, that is terrible, and that is terrible, because I know. And that's the knowledge I bring to this.
it's all well and good knowing your matchups backwards and forwards, but if you don't have the flexibility to swap faction at all, if it's just bad, it's bad, and there's no way you're not going to get around that, you know. But like, similarly, if you want, as I mentioned before, adversity breeds innovation, right? You if you're looking around, if you're really scraping the bottom of the barrel, looking for that thing in the codex that can really switch things around. I'm sure Rob has gone through this kind of thing. He's like, look through that codex backwards and forwards, trying to find something. Eventually he pulls something out of the barrel and he's like, yes, it's exactly what I need. And the rest of us look at him and it's a rotten apple core. And it's like, he's like, yes, no, you don't understand. This is exactly what I need, but it's still a rotten apple core.
This is exactly the right weight to set the Rube Goldberg machine off. And there's this beautiful just picture in my mind of how it works.
Yeah. Because it's all one of those things where it's very easy to sit there on your high horse and be very, elitist about your faction specialism and your mastery over it. But realistically, it can hurt you as often as it helps you.
It completely does. I think that's the thing. And I think being there for the ups and downs is part of it and part of what's romanticized about it and what we like about it. Mm-hmm. But as you say, at times it will mean, frustration and feeling like you're playing with your hands tied behind your back and feeling like you're swimming uphill, all sorts of things that make it really difficult. And as you say, tons of useful skills come out of that. But it's like, again, this is a hobby we play for fun or a sport sometimes to others that we play to win. And at times, both of those things suffer if you're just getting your face punched in by something better than you.
It goes the same way for faction opportunities as well, right?
Yes, so if
you're flipping around factions, if there's data sheets that aren't being used, right? Like, I met a guard player at the weekend who didn't know what the rattling data sheet does. But he's a guard player.
It's a good rattling data sheet.
Doesn't know what the rattling data sheet does.
Yep.
But, it can be if you're swapping around factions a lot, there's going to be the nuances that you don't necessarily pick up.
I completely agree. Actually, sometimes you get rules, mistakes, and errors off the back of such behavior. And indeed, we have all sorts of incidents, which I would say boil down to people change factions very quickly and then.
Can't think of any of those off the top of my
head. Fast and loose with what the army actually does or how the army actually works. And some of that's accidental and sometimes maybe that's not.
Rarely seems to be to their detriment, though.
It does rarely seem to be to their detriment.
Weird.
That is something I tend to note as well. And I do think with faction swapping, I think there's a massive difference between someone who is incredibly read up on and lived in with the meta in the game and how they interacts doing it to someone who sees on Reddit that X is good or sees a high win rate and just goes, oh, I'll go and do that now. I've definitely seen this locally where there'll be people who cycle through armies so quickly. And you're sort of like, the best advice I can give you is you haven't even mastered the basics of playing this game yet. And if you change the landscape on which you're playing the game every couple of months, you're sort of resetting, to be honest, because there's a whole bunch of new things you have to think about. So it can be very detrimental, I think, especially early on.
So on that topic, I think if you only play one sort of tournament, it becomes much easier to faction hop. So I didn't really play anything other than UKTC.
Indeed. Just,
time, effort, cost. I tried to hit one event a month. It's probably going to be whatever the UKTC event is. I live in the Midlands. That's where most of them are. So every game's the same. Every game's a bit paint by numbers. I know how the game plays. I know how all the factions play. You can kind of just plug and play, even if you change. It doesn't take that much learning
agree.
A new faction.
No, I'd agree. I think UKTC is probably the most solved meta in the world. And I think that's why a lot of top players like it, because they know exactly what's going to happen. And they're very happy with that because they don't have to think so much. But I think that, as you say, that is a big part of it. But again, the ability to interact with different environments or settings, again, is something where having good experience is useful. But that definitely is a big factor, I think. Where are we on now? Are we on cons?
we've finished the positives for both, I think.
We'll do if there's any more cons for either you can think of, chuck them in. But I feel like we've ruminated a lot of it. But then I say anything else you guys are thinking, chuck it in whilst we're here. This is your time to say your piece on all of this, Jack. So I've set you up for it.
I mean, I've basically covered everything that I think. Yeah. I think is. I have to say on it, really. I mean, as I say, it's easy to romanticize one over the other, but ultimately, there's no wrong way. I don't think to do it. I think there's
definitely wrong ways.
Yeah. See, the wrong way is generally to have heads of
badly.
But
I'm with you on that. Yeah. I do think you can do both badly, right? You can definitely specialize badly, and you can.
Yeah, I think
opportunistic badly as well.
I think both sort of schools of thought have their own strengths and weaknesses to the point where it kind of all comes out in the wash. You basically just get the advantage of your faction is a high, it's just stronger numerically, so you'll get a higher win rate. That's kind of like the main benefit of yes. being.
That's it. It's like, do you have a list advantage or an experience advantage? That's what it is in the end when you get to higher tables.
Yeah. So like it all kind of like comes out in the end. So I think you can like if you want to be a faction specialist and get to the top, you probably can, right? Are you going to win a 200 man super major with orcs right now? Probably not.
No, yeah, but here's the secret. You probably weren't going to fucking win it anyway. Like,
I'm just saying, size,
there's a pretty short list of people I'd expect to win those routines.
This is what I'm saying, right?
Yeah,
Like, if you're going to, say, like a 32-man GT, mm-hmm. then being the faction specialist, like, that can be enough to get you over the line, right?
It really
but,
can.
Yep. But when you start, like, ultimately, if players are better than you, they're going to beat you, right? Like, it doesn't matter if you're an opportunist or a specialist. Like,
yeah.
you know, you didn't see... Just because Eldar were really good and they had like nearly 70% win rate, you didn't see Joe Random come and win LGT, right? It was someone who knew exactly what they were doing.
Yes.
Who won LGT. So it's, you know, it'll take you a good way, right? Mm-hmm. And it probably make you a lot of enemies at your local, right? Being an opportunist.
Yeah.
But it's not a free ticket the whole way. Which is why I normally say it brings you probably up a win bracket for where your skill is. Mm-hmm. If you're a 3-2 player, it might bring you to a 4-1, but it's not going to win the event for you, right?
No, so. I think that's right. Yeah, unless you hit completely bonkers shades of broken, and you know, it just doesn't do that lifting. I think just like someone in the chat's mentioned we've got Callum Freeman says, I don't have the mental bandwidth with three kids and little hobby time to faction hop. So one faction per edition for me and allows me to slow grow them. I think that's another thing with this is that it is, you know, the game is not purely about the competitive side. And it is a case of one thing I've definitely found with changing armies is that you just develop a kind of sort of negative attitude towards the hobby and painting side because it just feels like a rush, just feels like something you're trying to do very quickly. And I enjoy painting and hobby a lot more when it's just for its own sake and it's kind of detached from.
Hold on. Are you trying to say that you can paint not to a deadline and that's just a thing that's possible?
I'm basically wedded to always doing that now. I don't really want to ever be just cramming stuff through for a deadline again. I can't be bothered. Rob's getting his Banshees ready for the Banshee meta.
And some people, it's going to shock you, some people paint for fun.
Yeah.
I actually quite like painting. I spent quite a lot of time on this boar with all his individually highlighted furs. That was the end of my point.
And okay. Tyranny says, with the rise of 3D printers, will we see more army helpers? I think yes, we already have. I think we definitively have.
Here's the thing. The only people who think that 3D printers will be the death of the hobby are the people with 3D printers. The vast, vast majority of people don't even know they exist.
Yes, for sure. It's, but I think within the top of the game, I think I've seen, there's been a lot more printing and speeding through of armies now.
There has, but I remember just lots of, you know, buying an army, selling an army. So I don't know if it's any different other than maybe it costs people a little bit less money, so maybe it makes it a little easier to do.
And I would say from an army hopping standpoint, the thing that has facilitated it more actually is TTS. I think over the last few years, a significant portion of the players in the competitive scene view this more as a video game than they do as a sort of full rounded sort of creative hobby in that sense. And a lot of them came straight out of TTS where they were playing it first and foremost as a video game during the pandemic, right? And that makes complete sense. That's a very logical way of looking at and understanding the game. But it really reinforces that, well, if I need a new tool, I just literally go on my Steam Workshop, download the units for a new tool, and I'm off. It's not even, you know, it takes 10 seconds. It's not that hard.
Yeah, I mean, that's a super common thing in, like, competitive video gaming, right? Like, so take, like, you know, your games like your Dota, your League of Legends, World of Warcraft, any of those, right? Let's say your class gets nerfed by, I don't know, 5% less damage, right? Yeah. Is that a meaningful, like, does it actually change anything? Probably not. But do you see the play number like rock, like absolutely go through the floor when that happens? Of course you do, because it's a mental thing, right? So even when you get like nerfs come through, I think again they use Chaos Space Marines again, their nerfs were very large, but their play rate proportionally has dropped off so much
dramatically.
Like there's no that's probably more than is justified by the changes that they got. But to go in like the other direction, like the hobby sort of stuff, you're mentioning about, right? I think an example of this is when with Drakari, when Sky Splinter came out, I'm going to bet Rob had basically every model he needed to run whatever Sky Splinter list he wanted straight away.
Yeah.
Right?
That's a big difference and a big advantage.
When you have a large collection,
you just go.
I think that's probably another feature of faction specialism, or at least faction passion, is you just collect across it, right? And you don't have everything because it was good at one point. You have it. Oh, here we go. Is this Orc Buggies or something? Is it Orc Buggies coming back?
My briefcase.
It's going to light up.
I seem to have accidentally locked this. What's that? Don't know what the code is. It's three zeros. That's
three zeros.
Let's continue. I'm just going to hold this briefcase full of Orc models. Don't worry about it.
But yeah, that's exactly right. Sky Splinter came out, and you just, we had all the right stuff. I bought five more incubi. I wanted five more incubi. That was it. I was like, 20 incubi suddenly feels fun, so I'm going to do that, and then good to go, right?
Yeah.
And that makes adapting very easy.
Yeah, and I do think you get a lot of sort of Boy Scout points, I think, for just like having that big army of like, because you're gonna have a large collection and it's all gonna be like probably like a similar standard of paint quality.
Yeah.
Right. I'm not gonna name any names. There was a person who I saw at a very large UKTC event with a Cursed Cultist, and those units were basically painted essentially one color, but it was like a different color for each unit, so you know which one was which.
Yeah.
That looked pretty bad, and I'm a person who is very much of the opinion that you are not entitled to a right to play against a nice looking army.
Because there's
people out there with different levels of skill, people out there with disabilities, people trying to paint, but all this sort of stuff. I don't think you're entitled to play against an army that looks good. Even I was like, that's a bit much, right? Yeah. And I think that you can get that a lot when you're doing rapid. Switches of armies.
Completely. And I think the game changes so quickly now that actually. It's almost
3 months, right?
Impossible, right? That's it. I think balance is now not only, it's not purely tied to releases because the slate's changed things much more dramatically. It's happening every 3 months. So the game simply changes too quickly for, if you get a fix on a meta army, it's going to be gone by the next one. And then it's like, it might be gone for the rest of the edition as far as, that whatever it is you're seeking is concerned.
And the stuff you want to buy, you can't buy it because it's not in stock.
There's that as well. God, exactly.
Try and buy Tetris. Like, you can't do it. You can't do it.
And when you do play against like a genuinely beautifully painted army, it's the best thing in the world. I mean, I just obviously shout out to sort of Paulie with his real space Drakari, the orange Drakari, they're stunning, just absolutely beautiful. And that's years of obsessing over that army.
Nothing scares me more than an Eldar army that's been hand painted and not airbrushed, because I know they've been playing it for a while, right? Like, they know what they're doing.
Like,
if I see the airbrush, I'm like, okay, it's not going to be that bad, right? They might forget a fade dice here and there.
There were a lot of slightly wobbly Star Weavers with very bad airbrush paint jobs. And you're like, I think I'll be all right here. I think this will be fine.
My favourite is, I'm not going to name any names, not going to name and shame, but one of my previous team had a 3D printed Maliceptor at the height of Maliceptor fame. They didn't have the scale right. It was about 200%. It was so big. It's just like an absolute paperweight, still on the right base, spilling over in every dimension. It was like, I don't even know how you put paint on that and go, maybe this is right. No, it was horrendous.
I mean, that's a good point, actually. Maliceptor is a really good example of another benefit to being a faction specialist. Again, large collections, right? Stuff comes out.
Who had Maliceptors? Right.
I remember way back when I was but a wee teenager, and I was listening to a 40K podcast, and the week that the Maliceptor came out, and everyone was like, this is fucking shit, and no one would ever take it. But eventually it'll come around again, right? Obviously, there's the downside if you're a Space Marine player, and your entire faction gets destroyed, like, or half your models get destroyed and taken out of circulation. But like for most other factions, that's not really
I think good examples for Drakari. All the new bits that came out for Drakari weren't that good for the first cycle of them being out, and then got good, right? So Drazar came out, he was kind of fine, but then in 9th he was amazing. Lilith came out, kind of fine, and then in 10th, amazing. And it's like, if you've actually just gone and got and collected those things because you're doing that, then suddenly you're sat on the thing that's good. You don't have to run and buy it immediately.
Back to what we were talking about, because we got slightly derailed. I've just realized Games Workshop are so petty that if you are good in an edition, you will pay for your sins the next edition.
That's exactly how they do it, yeah.
I mean, what are the two best armies of last edition? Drakari and Nids. What are the two most anemic armies on launch? Drakari and Nids.
Add Admech to that. There was a whole list. I would say there was a literal list of Naughty Step armies. I would agree. Jesus. I think a whole bunch of the... But again, you think about when 10th was written. Think about what was happening in 9th when 10th was written. Think about who the baddies were at that moment in time. Yeah, might well be.
Games Workshop employees.
Might well be that that was a part of it. But then Orcs were also bad for a bit, and Orcs got a pretty fun index, I felt.
They were bad early enough in the edition that it's been forgotten, and they were also weren't the best army in the game at any point. They were struggling with Admech and at the start, and then Drakari as they came out. They ended up being the third of the top three armies.
Stanley Peddle, hello, by the way, it says, the ability to glance at your shelf and have lots of freedom of what you want to take on list submission day is quite freeing and relaxing. Yeah, I'd agree. And I think, again, if you're just like your army, like your faction, enjoy playing it, then taking something weird and wonderful, go for it. You know,
right. I have to imagine if you were a faction opportunist and you like played Drakari when they were really good in 9th edition, and then they got nerfed, and then you sold that army, right? And then it comes back around again where a bunch of those units are good again, and you want to buy it, right? That's got to be soul destroying. I can't imagine.
I'm not going to
name names. But someone I helped to play Drakari back in the day, when their moment passed and they wanted to play Harlequins, I was like, if you sell this now, you will buy it again. And they just bought their Drakari army again about 2 weeks ago.
I can't remember who it is, but there's someone who has been taken note of in our group chat. And every time they sell an army on Facebook, someone posts a picture in the group chat. He's like, he's done it again. I can't remember who it is. But it does come up genuinely every 2 to 3 months.
It is that person, but it might be that person. And it gets a bit pathological at that point. Now, I mean, yeah. I don't know. I think there's actually an underlying financial damage to this, I suppose, is worth commenting on, which is that a lot of people can't afford to be buying a new army every few months, right? That's crazy money. And that, I mean, that probably explains partly the kind of sell, rebuy, whatever else kind of pattern. And so it is a bit of a luxury that some people have and others don't, in that sense as well.
It's not just financial, it's time, isn't it? Like getting
time is a big one. Yeah.
To get 2,000 points up and ready for me takes months. I know, Ed, you can get them smashed out pretty quickly.
I realized that after I painted my three killer cans, I was like, there is no way I'll have this done by the time the book is out. This is not going
to
happen.
That's a good point. I need to buy some more Dirty Down Rust because my last one's
really... Yeah.
Get those texture paints on.
Stonks and Dirty Down Rust are about to go up.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, man. There is no way on God's Green Earth I will paint 3 more Riptides. So they're staying in my collection forever. Yeah,
you just keep those.
Like,
you
it's not happening. Those. And they'll be good again.
They always come back in the end. Yeah.
They'll get nerfed and then they'll be good again. And...
Yeah.
But I guess that's the benefit of having a small... Like a relatively small roster,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
I think I've got about 7,000 points of Drukhari, and that's basically 3 of every unit.
Yeah, exactly.
It's an upside of having a small
faction. The only two armies I have that for are Drukhari and GSC, probably. And again, GSC is not a big range, right? So it's like, you have the stuff. And that's the nice thing about it. When their rules do change, you're like, right, I'm good to go. And so that's quite fun. That's a nice position to be in. And that's probably your best shot at being both a specialist but also someone who can adapt, right? Is having that collection. You're ready to go as and when there are good changes.
I think it's an interesting question for you guys. I want to know your opinion. In an ideal world, do you think most 40k players should be, or like, would you want them to be specialists or would you want them to be opportunists? If money was like no object and people could just, so say it was like effectively as easy as swapping a character in a PC game, right, or whatever. And you could be a faction specialist or an opportunist and just swap whenever you want, or you could be a specialist and know all the factions. What do you think would be better? Like, which would you prefer, I guess?
I like specialists more than opportunists. I just straight up do. I mean, that's why we do. State of play is about people who actually know the armies well, and it's like, I would rather that. I prefer that game. And what I would love is for competitive outcome to not be so explicitly linked to opportunism, right?
How dull is it when you rock up to an event and 3 out of your 5 games are against the same list?
Yeah, it sucks. That's a different problem though, which is the echo chamber effect on list creativity and also 10th edition not being very interesting.
That's a whole other episode that we could do, right?
We'll come to that, because I think players have got less and less imaginative even in the 2 or 3 years I've played this game, and I'd love to do an episode where we just shout.
I mean, I'm down for that. That's what I do when I'm not on camera. But that's partially 10th edition. Like, yeah, the dumbing down of the rules.
I literally just don't need to write lists anymore. It's so sad. I just
well, I mean,
I have one of each army just at the top, and you're like, that's it.
That's one of the things that I think is an advantage for faction hopping or opportunist, sorry, because if you enjoy the list building aspect of it, you get very bored completely. Very quickly when you write for one faction. I had to pick up a whole new game just to, you know, keep fresh. So now I'm writing lists in Old World and 40K just to keep my first going.
And I do think that kind of brain itch of let's test it, try it out, figure it out is really fun. Right? That's how my Night Lords happen, and I regret it.
I played Blood Angels earlier. I'm never playing Blood Angels again.
Yeah.
I was just like, I want to see how this works.
I think they're decent Blood Angels.
Yeah, it was really good.
All right. I think any closing comments, guys, before we move it on to some questions? We nailed it. Well done, us. Very good. Excellent. Be whichever one you want, people. Just be good at it. I don't mind how you do it. Okay, so we
just
now...
one thing.
Yeah.
If you're one of them, don't say you're the other one. All right.
Yes.
No one likes that. No one likes that. If you're an opportunist, that's fine. Just own it. Right.
Don't say
you're a specialist. Or similarly, if you're a specialist and you play like five armies, but you play each of them like once a month, don't say you're a specialist either.
I think that's part of it, and I think the other thing is also lay off the other kind as well. There's no need to don't get on a high horse and go and whinge at whatever the people who play it, they're not the way you play it. Like, don't waste time on that. And have some self-awareness about what you are is always useful, right?
And if you are a faction opportunist, try and fix that bit of your brain that tells you to be a special snowflake and just run the third or fourth best army. Stop doing it. Just run the best army.
If you are gonna do it, you might as well
stop playing the thing that's quite good but not the best, and just go, I'm gonna play the best army. It's fine, you can do that. I don't think I could do that.
Our first question's come through from Entropic Tyranny, and they say, who will get buffs in the next data slate? Any predictions?
Admech,
yeah.
No, they'll get something. I think Admech players are just where, you know, the gimps of 40K go. The self-flagellating, the masochists. Oh, step on me, nerf my army harder. So I think Games Workshop needs to funnel them into one army for all of our sakes.
I think that's demon players from my experience.
No, demon players get very, very whingy when they don't have good rules.
Yeah, Admech probably feel like one that will get a buff. I don't think stuff like GSC will get touched because it's got a book coming.
That's the thing, isn't it?
Knights might get touched.
Yeah, I just want them to run back the change to their bondsman abilities.
Yeah,
if they run that back, I think they're in like a still sub 50% win rate, but in a better place.
There'll probably be something random.
Slate changes will be buffs to internal balance, so you see more varied builds, not just the standard.
Yeah, it'll be points, won't it? I think it'll just be points.
That'd be nice, so it won't happen.
The problem I find is that with the taking away of, well, basically moving us over to power level, essentially, is that it's very difficult to alter internal balance with points now.
Yeah, I completely agree.
Where it used to be, it more gets changed by data sheet abilities. But in terms of, I reckon something really random is going to get buffed. I don't know, like T-Suns or something will just get randomly
That would be a huge mistake, I think.
Yeah. I just mean like, you know, Rubric Cryo Terminators have gone down by 25 points or something.
The Terminators
or something,
you don't
right?
see, actually. Yeah, the Terminators you don't see. But yeah,
there'll be 25 points a model.
Yeah, something. It'll be something ridiculous, right?
Yeah.
There'll be a typo in there. We're running 5-point Terminators or something.
Oh, my word.
And then, of course, you will inevitably have the now annual tradition, or not annual, it's like quarterly tradition of the Tyranid buff nerf of we're going to randomly change one thing up by 50 points and one thing down by 25 points. And it's not really going to change anything. And then we'll just, I think we're currently on a buff for the Tyran effects. We'll put the Tyran effects back up 50 points. So, and then the next data slate will, and then the next data slate will just put it back down 50 points again.
It's behind my computer. I'm not going to grab my Tyran effects.
We'll just keep putting it up and down.
I've got one in a box. If you want a second one, Ed, that's never.
I don't even want one. God, I love that model. It was so good.
Christopher Richardson says, on data sheet abilities, then what's one change to a data sheet that you would most like to see?
Please give me a new data sheet rule for the broadside battle suits. A 4+ feel no pain against mortal wounds is fucking worthless and makes no sense.
That is fair.
Does it not work on dev?
No.
That's really sad. That's really sad.
But here's a data ability I would actually like to see changed. is to the there's two actually. I want to see one for the battle tactic change for the Zero CP. I think instead of it being what it is now, it should be you either choose if the said strat is free or you use it for a second time. I don't think you should get both. I think that would be a better change than the battle tactic nonsense we have now.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And the other one, I think, is the dev wound change should be keep it doing mortal wounds instead of the weird like limbo it's in now, but you just can't kill more models than you do wounds.
Yeah.
That's where it is currently, isn't it?
But they're not mortal wounds.
Right, so protection against mortal wounds. They just need to change all protection against mortal wounds to be mortal wounds and death wounds. I think that's the cleaner way of doing it.
It's the same end way. I think it's just semantics, but it ends up being the same thing, right?
For sure.
Yeah, I'd like to see the Dark Angels unit, whatever they're called, the sword bearers, whatever.
Inner Circle Companions,
yeah. I'd like to see them not terrible. That'd be cool.
Yeah.
What do they do now?
No.
They sit on shelves.
Yeah. I think they're more expensive and worse than Blade Guard is basically all I remember, and they immediately went out of my brain. I looked at it and was like, oh, that's bad. Anyway, let's look at good units.
Are there any good Drakari ones, Rob?
I just want a new Hellions data sheet.
Hellions,
rubbish.
Hellions, what even is their data? Oh, they can fall back and charge.
Fall back and charge, I think. But
that'd be all right if they weren't made out of paper.
If they could actually charge something, it might be good.
Yeah, just being infantry wouldn't be enough, would it? I don't think.
I think it would be.
You think it would?
Yeah, because they're AP2 with pain tokens now.
That's true. And sustained on the 5-5. Yeah.
I'll be honest, getting breachable just kind of makes a lot of things better. Like the ability to move through a ruin wall is a lot. It's kind of all that a lot of stuff.
There
needs.
We go.
Maybe that's
all crisis suits become infantry. That'd be incredible.
That would be absolutely enormous for Tau at this moment in time.
I think they'd be such a worthwhile army to play.
The list you could do.
Old school flyback.
You can't say stuff like that on this podcast, Ed. I need some blood left in my brain to continue podcasting. So in all seriousness, if that happened, I think Tau would be the best army in the game.
Yeah.
Not even kidding. I think they would be ridiculously good.
I don't even know if that's true. Because the suits are so much worse than they were. I think it just means that you can take them without it being such a negative now.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're probably going to see like one or two units now. But I think they'd be ridiculously strong if that was the case.
Yeah.
Retaliation cadre would be absolutely nuts.
Oh, God. That would be lovely. I still think it wouldn't be the best. I think you'd still take one car and just put suits in it. That would be the way forward. Oh, take me back. Also, give me a melee Tau data sleep while we're just, you know.
Have you seen the picture on the Monk Car index? They've all got swords. They've all got swords.
Yeah,
it upsets me on a primal level.
Just let them have swords. Like, that's all we want. Just some melee crisis would be amazing.
Why did you draw them with swords?
They're doing it to bait me.
Why did you draw them with swords?
It's so brutal. It's so brutal. Right, I've got some questions coming out of our Discord.
Is infiltrate and scout. Don't give any units both those.
Yeah, that's so fucking dumb.
If you're going to infiltrate, really have a risk attached to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is really annoying. Really, really annoying.
I can't believe scouts are still only 65 points.
They're bonkers.
That's like, how is that okay?
It's not okay.
It's not. Silly.
Right, I'm going to pick some out of the Discord. We have Sai, who says, does having access and wanting to play one or two other armies mean you are no longer a faction specialist in the eyes of the Plus in brackets? Does it mean that the specialist has a wider appreciation as they experience these other factions? I mean, I'd lean towards the latter, right, I think.
I mean, when your second faction is Yunari, no, I don't think so.
Yeah, I think, as we've already kind of alluded to, you can definitely be a specialist in multiple factions. I guess the question would be, if you don't ever play those factions except when they're like the best thing ever, are you really a specialist in it, or are you just a specialist in what's really, really good?
Yeah. If you only own like Eldar, Marines, and Necrons, and then you played Eldar when they were good, and then you switched over to Marines and the Codex came out, and then now you're on Necrons, that's probably army opportunist. But at the same time, if you're the kind of person that only gets in like one game a month and switches like every month, you're probably not a faction specialist on those three either. No. Like,
just a casual player, aren't you? And I don't think army opportunists or faction specialists are casual. I think they've already gone way past that.
Yeah.
At that point, haven't they? Yeah, completely. yeah, so I'd say we love the one army fashion specialist kind of idea. It's a lovely idea, but I think you can absolutely be multiple armies. Brainseller asks, what kind of faction specialist would be the worst to be stuck in a lift with alone for 5 hours?
Oh, custodies.
Yeah, it would be custodies.
Or Eldar. Eldar also pretty bad.
It's a finesse army. I'm actually really good. I'm very good.
I've actually always played Eldar. I just started playing the game in 10th edition.
This is a subgenre I can hate is someone across the table. Maybe we should do a skit about this when I see Chris tomorrow. But someone who's across the table from you, desperately trying to persuade you the wider like cultural aesthetic of the reason they're playing this 67% win rate army that they're about to absolutely annihilate. But yeah,
With the absolute like hardcore meta build.
Yeah.
No, you don't understand. Like it's.
So there is no need. It's okay. You don't need to trace it back.
I've included one wave serpent. That makes it a fluff list.
I've got a fluff list with Mortarion and a great unclean one tomorrow, and it's going to have a horrible time. But I'm excited to see how it gets on. Next question. Oh, I mean, I think custodians for that question. Rob, what faction specialist would you not want to be stuck in a lift with?
The faction specialist who isn't a faction specialist.
Yeah.
You could just smell the bullshit coming off.
Very good. If you had to pick just one faction to play against forever, what faction would you choose? Not limited to just current rules, but any general playstyles or army themes.
Marines, because there's so many data sheets, there's so many different archetypes you could play against.
It's not just that Drakari kill them really hard.
And I barely have used Marines, so I'm on board with that.
Yeah, nice.
I was going to say Chaos Space Marines for the same reason. They also have a lot of ally options.
Oh, yeah,
which are very fun. Yeah. Like you can do knights and you can do demons in there.
Yeah,
true.
I wouldn't want to play against just one army forever. I'd go insane.
No, it'd be so
that's
dull.
My idea of actual purgatory. But I guess maybe orcs because fun, silly, yeah. Lots of different models.
Yeah,
just getting warred at twice
just
a game,
getting
every game
at
forever.
For the rest of your life.
every yeah. game you get to chew through 100 models, and you're like, I feel like I've achieved something.
Yeah.
40 points because you've got no primary.
Exactly. Can you use the stomper next time? I'm not enjoying that. Teacher asks, how much of an advantage does it give a faction specialist to play something that no one else does? And I think it's worth pointing out that Sai, who plays exclusively Imperial Agents, has responded to this question with a shush face.
I think it depends how... Well, it does. It definitely gives you an advantage, but also it depends how much of a shit you are. If you're playing a faction that people don't know and then you deliberately don't tell people the niche things, or if you're playing a unit that other people don't...
That's the thing,
yeah.
Is that just playing unsportingly rather
yeah,
than...
I'm not pointing any fingers here at all, like genuinely not. Yeah. But like when I was at Manchester a couple of weeks ago, my Venatari allow me to rapid ingress 2 units. And if I hadn't pointed that out to opponents in the pre-game chat, I think those games would have gone very differently and it would have been much, much easier for me to win games.
Yeah,
but that's
just
not on.
For sure, for sure.
I think you, in terms of, like, I think GSC is a great example. People generally don't know what GSC do, right?
At every event I took GSC to, you have 4 games where they find out what that does, and then 1 game where they know what you're going to do, and that's the hard game.
And then right? You have stuff like if you want to get to like a team's perspective, right? Or even just a singles perspective, it's the same thing. We've already mentioned it, but if you play something that no one else plays, probably a reason no one else is playing it, so it's probably there's a good chance that it's not like very good, which in a team's situation can be quite detrimental for the team, or if you're playing, if you're trying to get onto like your national team, it can prevent you from getting on the national team just because you play a faction that while you're very good at that faction, it's if it's not what fits in the team, then you just kind of screwed yourself.
And I'll tell you from being inside those kinds of conversations is if you do cook up ideas, or this isn't me, watch other people cook ideas, that idea that's yours won't be your idea for very long. It'll be someone else's idea very loudly and very aggressively in lots of games on
TTSC. That sounds
almost
like having a YouTube channel and making content ideas.
Yeah, exactly that. It just goes.
I'm thinking things, and I'm just like, don't say it.
Everybody be good. We're a nice show. We're a nice show, and we're going to move on to the next question. It does give you some advantage. Does it give you enough? Maybe not. Hannibal asks, what were the host's first 40k armies? That's a fun question. Ed, what was your first 40k army?
So I started playing when I was 8, and I picked up models from the market stall in Durham Market. But it would have been Space Marines, I think, realistically, just because that was what was easy to get. And then just to complete the answer, when I came back to the hobby in 8th edition after a like 8-year break, it was Space Marines.
Nice. Rob, what was your first RV?
I got the 3rd edition starter box set with Space Marines and Drukhari.
Hey, look at this. Look at that for an origin story all the way back. Yeah. Genuine lineage can be traced here. Amazing.
Yeah.
How about you, Jack?
Tyranids, actually.
Okay.
Because I got the little, there was like a little star box, so you got like 3 or 4 gaunts in it.
Oh, nice.
I got that.
One of those paint boxes.
Yeah, like that was my first like army, I guess. I didn't do a full army, but that was the first like collection of models I had. First full army I did was Raven Guard Space Marines.
Nice. Yeah, I painted some salamanders when I was like 8, but then first army I played was Death Guard when I came back in. And those
Keeping
Death Guard,
green.
Those Death Guard are, yeah, I like, green's my favorite color. I love green. I'm wearing it right now. The Death Guard are getting a run out in the back row tomorrow, so that'll be fun. Incredibly non-optimized list. God help me. That's going to be really fun. Cool. Okay. And then 6++ Edward, who is our Edward, wants to know, is it pronounced Wah or Wag? With
so
a G
this
emphasized
is,
at the end.
This isn't a question that needs asking. This is just an opportunity to have a rant. How many words in the fucking English language have the GH pronounced at the end? It's non, you daft. But it's like, it's Wah. There's no argument to be had. How many people have you seen mispronounce it? It drives me batty.
It's war, right? They're saying war, like as in we're going to war. So they say war.
I don't know if that's right, but
I think that's what it's meant. It's like a bastardization of English, right? Here's one that annoys me, right? Satan. It's pronounced Satan.
Is it?
Like Satan, right? The Deathbringer, like Satan, right?
Okay. I like Catan, though, because Settlers of Catan.
Yeah,
is it actually pronounced?
I'm pretty sure it is pronounced Satan. Because
this is twice that you've assigned meaning to words where there is objectively no meaning assigned. So I feel like that kind of ruins your argument.
Yeah, but I mean, this is the age-old wargamer strategy of say something confidently enough and everyone will believe you.
Yeah, yeah, unless you have
Ed
someone
is,
at the other
Ed
side.
Ed is never going to tell you off for that, all right? You're not going to catch any heat from Ed about
that. Hold on. Where's your fucking proof, mate?
Yeah. I'm sure there was like some... I've definitely read some like Necron fluff about how the Satan were... Like a lot of depictions of demons and devils and in history were actually... Like the Grim Reaper is actually the Nightbringer and it's just... been imprinted on cultural
how does that
guys.
Work? Warhammer's only been around for about 40 years.
but yeah, I'm sure I've seen that in the lore somewhere.
Yeah, yeah.
So I always say it's Satan because
makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll always say Catan.
Yeah. Now you will.
I did before.
Although you go about it differently, you can both respect each other and see the good in the approach that you're taking.
I don't respect him.
Oh, Edward, play nice with the faction specialist, Ed.
Can't make me.
In Dawn of War, in the intro, you may remember there's that bit where all the orcs put their little weapons up and they all shout, and it just sounds like they're screaming war at the top of their heads. To be honest, I don't think the G feature is particularly dominant.
Oh, I forgot that's what we were arguing about.
Yeah, I just thought I'd bring it back to the original start point.
Big fan of war orcs.
Well, that's it. I figure, is that not just where it comes from? Potentially, but I don't know. I don't know enough about orcs.
Well, I think they also don't speak English, so I don't know if that's. You know, a slight limiting factor.
Well, they're all Cockneys in the 40k universe for some reason.
Which is hilarious.
Which
I'm
is
a big
pretty
fan
funny.
Of that.
Yeah.
Everyone, I've seen stuff. Everyone speaks English in space.
They do. So
in those
in
TV documentaries.
Little tiny bits of bad Chinese as well, to be fair. They did at least try, but that's about it. Right, okay. I think that's us done. If you have any last minute questions in the chat, do feel free to fire them off. There was something about the sausage. Dom is still talking. What are you saying, Dom? What are you lads taking to Hellstorm? Not going to tell you. Figure it out. And then he says, I'm buzzing. I might have to play CSM to settle the bet. Yeah, play CSM. That'd be fun.
That'd be a very faction specialist
no,
thing
you
of you to do,
Tom.
Wouldn't it?
Come on.
You wouldn't dare. or if he would, it'll be because he's seen the boards and he'll bring a bunch of Vindicators. But either way, you know, an opportunist at heart. We love you. And on that note, we will sign off. Thanks very much for tuning in. Please do hit like, subscribe, leave comments. And obviously, yeah, do consider signing up to be a member and supporting us. It means the world. We will see you again next time. Can't remember exactly what we're talking about. It might be a general 10th edition yay or nay kind of review, seeing where we feel with the game at this moment in time. But yeah, see you then. Hopefully we'll start just as chaotically as we started this episode. Bye.